Hello and welcome to Biblical Breadcrumbs. And in this episode, as we're kind of introducing you to Jesus, we've been looking at a bunch of different things about him. We've been looking at the things he said and the things that he taught. We've been looking at the things he did and some of the miracles that he performed. And even though, you know, no normal human being can do these miracles, well, that's exactly the point now, isn't it? That no one can do the things that Jesus has done. And now we're getting to the point where we've been asking these questions, right? Even the wind and the waves obey him. Who is this then? So it's about time that people start recognizing who Jesus is. And that's exactly what you find as you get into Luke chapter 9 and you deal with kind of the disciples' reaction to him. So in Luke chapter 9, Jesus opens up by picketing, he has his 12 disciples who follow him, right? He gives them some power. He allows them to go out and teach. And they go out, they teach, they do some miracles as well. They heal, they cast out demons, they come back. They spend some time with Jesus. And as part of that process, Jesus talks to them about who he is and what he's doing and why all of this matters. And so he asks them a simple question. Starting in verse 18, Luke chapter 9, let's just start reading in verse 18. While he was praying in private, and his disciples were with him, he asked them, "Who do the crowd say that I am?" They answered, "But John the Baptist. Others, Elijah. Still others, that one of the ancient prophets has come back." "But you," he asked them, "who do you say that I am?" Peter answered, "The Christ of God." But he strictly warned and instructed them to tell this to no one, saying, "It is necessary that the Son of Man suffer many things, and be rejected by the elders, chief priests, and scribes, be killed, and be raised the third day." And then he said to them, "If anyone wants to follow after me, let him deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. For whoever wants to save his life will lose it, but whoever loses his life because of me will save it. For what does it benefit someone if he gains the whole world and yet loses or forfeits himself? For whoever is ashamed of me and my words, the Son of Man will be ashamed of him when he comes in his glory, and that of the Father and the holy angels. Truly, I tell you, there are some standing here who will not taste death until they see the kingdom of God." When Jesus is dealing with his disciples, they've seen and heard enough. They've experienced enough, even personally. They've been able to do some miracles. They've done some teaching of their own. They've seen enough to have an understanding of who he is. And so he asks them in verse 18, who do the crowds say that I am? And he broadens it, right? Who does everyone say that I am? All these people who are around you, they have an understanding of who I am. They have a feeling about who I am. Who do they say that I am? And of course, the disciples bring back the public report that, oh, Jesus is important. He's like John the Baptist, who is a really important guy and a good prophet. Or he's like Elijah, who was a really important guy and a good prophet. Or maybe even this, he's like one of the other ancient prophets, who's like a really good guy and a good prophet. And Jesus says, cool, right? It's great to be considered a good guy, and it's great to be considered a good prophet, but is that all? When you look at Jesus, when you look at his teaching, how revolutionary it is as it introduces a new covenant. And when you look at Jesus and you're seeing him lay down all these principles, principles that will go on to inform Christianity, principles that are different from Judaism and different from any other religion today, principles that are eternal and foundational to the Bible and everything that goes into it. As Jesus introduces all of these things, is he just another version of Elijah? Elijah was pretty cool, but he didn't reveal anything new. He just took what God said and applied it to the people of his day. Jesus changes things. Jesus also takes what God says and he applies it to the people of his day in the same way as a prophet, but he takes these new things that humans have not heard before, and he is revealing God's will and God's rules to a new nation. He's much more like Moses than he is Elijah. Elijah was also an impressive prophet, the first of the prophets that we might think of, but Moses was the lawgiver. Moses was the one who brought the testament down from Mount Sinai to the people of Israel. Moses initiated the old covenant when God spoke to him and gave him that Old Testament. Moses was the one who brought it down. Jesus is more like that than anything. And so they're missing it. Okay, John the Baptist, he was cool, but is that all? And so he asks them, he turns and asks them, okay, right, I've heard what everybody else is saying about me. These are the public reports. Everybody knows this. Jesus already knew it. The apostles already knew it. We all know that people think I'm just a prophet. But you guys, who have been privileged to see some things that nobody else has, you guys who have been privileged to hear some things that nobody else has heard, you guys who have a better understanding of the parables because you asked me and I explained it directly to you, you guys who saw the wind and the waves cease at my word, who asked this question, who is this then? You guys have seen more, you've heard more, you have bigger opportunity to understand who I am, and so I have to ask you guys, who do you say that I am? And Jesus brings it down. It's not just a public appeal to popular opinion, as it were, but it is a personal appeal to their opinion. What do you think about me? And Peter, bless his heart, the impetuous guy, Peter steps up and says, you are the Christ of God, or God's Messiah, or whatever title, whatever pronunciation you want to put in there. You are essentially the Christ, right? The Christ being the inheritance of David. He's going to come and he's going to rule Israel. That's the understanding of the Christ. The Christ is someone who's going to come and free Israel from Roman oppression. Hey, that's Jesus, right? The Christ is someone who's going to establish an eternal kingdom for Israel. Hey, that's Jesus. That's all wrapped up in this idea. You are the Christ of God. The Christ of God, it's not just that you are, again, Christ is a term that means anointed one. Christ and Messiah is the Hebrew term. Christ is a Greek term. The English equivalent would be the anointed one. Whichever term you put in there, it doesn't really matter. What Peter's saying is you are important. You are key here, and you're going to do everything, and you're going to save this people, and you're going to play such a pivotal role in our history. That's you. That's nobody else. And Peter is very clear on that you are the Christ of God. And Jesus, he accepts that. He doesn't push back on that, right? And that's something you got to understand. Jesus is such an interesting character because I think we've talked about this a couple weeks ago, but Jesus doesn't give you many options on who he is, right? The C.S. Lewis, who's a good writer, he's an English guy from back in the, I forget exactly when he wrote, he was contemporaries with J.R.R. Tolkien, who was writing in the, you know, 40s, 50s, 60s, so Lewis was sometime around then. Lewis has a piece, a little article, I guess, or I don't remember exactly how long it is. It's about this concept of Jesus being Lord or liar or lunatic, and he puts those three L's together, and he explains kind of where he's coming from. Then when you look at Jesus and the things he claims and the things he accepts others claiming about him, such as the fact that he is the Christ who's coming to save everyone and provide everything for everyone, when you look at him accepting that, that's pretty difficult to then say, you know, Jesus was a good person, he was a good teacher, he just wasn't the Christ. Right? Because a good person would not lie about something so important. A good person wouldn't lie, right? Especially not about something that's so important for the future of all of these people's souls. You can't say that Jesus was a good person and then he just like blatantly lied here. And yet when Peter calls him the Christ, he doesn't push back. He doesn't say no. He says, he doesn't say anything. He just accepts that and then moves on like it's a fact because it is. Right? And either he's completely right and you need to listen to him and everything he says, or he's completely wrong and you need to avoid him at all costs. along with everything he said. There is no in-between, in which Jesus is pretty good, but I'm not going to entirely listen to him. No, he hasn't left that option open to us. That's C.S. Lewis's argument. He didn't leave that open. He didn't intend to leave that open. Jesus is either right or not. There is no in-between. And here he claims to be Christ. Is he right or is he not? That's what the evidence is for. That's why we have stories about him healing and doing miracles. That's why we have stories about him teaching, so that we can evaluate whether or not that claim is accurate, because the fact is he makes that claim, that he is the Christ of God. And so he strictly warns them, and he instructs them, and he hones in on them to tell this to nobody. And he says, look, you know what's going to happen, right? Since I'm the Christ, you know what's going to happen, verse 22, it is necessary that the Son of Man, which is a reference to an Old Testament title, Son of Man is key for this Christ idea in the Old Testament, and so Jesus kind of terms himself that, and he uses that title for himself most often. The Son of Man is going to suffer, he's going to be rejected, he's going to be killed, and he's going to be raised. And so he outlines his future for the apostles, so that they can see when it happens that he was, in fact, right the whole time. Again, Jesus is making these claims that I am going to suffer, that I am going to be rejected by all of the religious leaders, that I am going to be killed, and then that I will be raised again. Is that true or not? Well, Jesus is claiming it, and so we'll have to wait and see if that comes to pass. He's going to claim this again later in this chapter, by the way. He's going to claim it over in verses 43 and 44, that let the word sink in. The Son of Man is about to be betrayed into the hands of men, and they didn't get it. And so Jesus will occasionally talk about his betrayal, he'll talk about his death, and he'll talk about his resurrection and coming back to life after he dies. Does that happen? Is that accurate? Well, we'll have to wait and see. And so he lays this groundwork. He makes these claims. If they are false claims, he is a false teacher. But if they're true claims, he's the only true one. And so we have to evaluate. And that's what the evidence is for. And so in the meantime, while we're waiting on that, it'll be a little bit yet before he is rejected entirely and killed entirely, and then before he rises again. It'll be a while. And so, in the meantime, he's going to teach his disciples a lot of things. A lot of things because, you know, if he is who he claims to be, if he is the Christ, if he is this important, they're going to need to follow him. And so he makes this claim that I am the Christ if these things happen. Right? If I'm true that I'm going to die and come back to life, if God is going to bring me back to life because I said that he would bring me back to life, then God's behind me, and God's behind my other words, and God's behind all this message that I'm giving you. And so he decides to give further message to them so that if or when he is proven to be the Christ that he claims to be, he can go to his disciples and say, all right, I claim that the whole time. So you need to do this, like I said the whole time. And so he continues talking to them, and he's going to continue teaching, and he's going to continue doing miracles in the meantime while we're waiting for this death and resurrection thing to come about whenever it does. And so he says to them, if anyone wishes to follow after me, what do you do? You're going to do a couple of different things, three different things, actually. You're going to deny yourself, which is to say, get rid of yourself and your own desires. You're no longer going to follow after the things that you want to do all the time. And instead, you're going to follow after me because Jesus is in charge. If Jesus is the Christ, right? If he is the one who's coming to save everyone, if he's got the power of God behind him, we don't get to say no, right? I mean, we get a choice. We can say yes or no. We can listen to him or not. That is totally up to us. But if Jesus is who he says he is, then the only rational response is to accept that and work with him, to deny ourselves, to get rid of ourselves and do and serve him instead of serving ourselves. Secondly, take up your cross daily. The idea here is a cross is a symbol of crucifixion. It's a symbol of brutal Roman execution. It was made by crucifixion was a thing. I think the Babylonians did it, or Persians did it. Maybe they originated it. Rome perfected it, and Rome was really, really good at it. And so what they would do is they take a cross, they take two pieces of wood and bolt them together, and then they bolt someone onto the wood and lift them up there until they and leave them for hours until they eventually suffocate to death, and then take the disgusting body down and throw it in a ditch. That's how criminals get punished in the Roman Empire. That's how evildoers are made an example. And so, hey, there's this picture of a crucifixion. They would have seen this. Like, not all the time, not like every day, but on a decently regular basis, they would be familiar with this imagery. It's possible that while they're walking and while they're talking, they're passing by a crucifixion, or they've just seen one like 3 minutes before. And Jesus is saying, hey, that's what you've got to do. It's not just deny yourself. It's not just, oh, I want to do this, but I'm not going to do this right now. It's not just, I want to serve myself, but I'm going to do something for God, and then I'm going to serve myself. No, it's I'm going to work for God to the extent that you take up your cross and you follow him to a place of execution. That's the idea, to get rid of yourself entirely. Not to, like, go and, you know, off yourself. That's not what Jesus is asking for. It's not a literal type of thing where you were volunteering for the firing squad, as it were. But it is a metaphor for how totally we have to give ourselves to God in all entirety. There is no holding back. You cannot be God's. You cannot be Christ. You cannot follow him entirely if you keep some of yourself back. And so, thus, he says, take up your cross daily and follow. Jesus has said he's going to be killed. Jesus uses this imagery of death and violence to convey an image to us that just like he is going to be killed, we ought to be killed. Just like he is going to literally end up going to a cross, we metaphorically take our crosses and follow him, that we sacrifice our self-will on the altar of service towards him and towards God, if in fact he is who he says he is. And so the entire section is predicated on this question, who is Jesus? If Jesus is the Christ, if he is God, if God supports him and validates his word, as he has done through miracles before, and as Jesus is prophesying he will do through an eventual resurrection, if Jesus is God, you need to follow him, and this is your only option. If Jesus is not God, none of this matters. And this whole teaching that you need to abandon yourself and be like me, that teaching becomes worthless. Worse than worthless, it becomes harmful if Jesus is just lying. Again, there is no middle ground. Either he's right or he's not. And that's up to you to decide as we continue on looking at the evidence in the book. He gives an example in verse 24 that anyone who wants to, you know, save himself, anyone who wants to save his life, anyone who wants to do stuff for himself, that's the way you lose your life. You don't win by keeping what you have. No, you go out and sacrifice. You go out and give. You go out and you know, lose everything for the sake of Jesus. A good person doesn't say that unless it's true. A good person doesn't call for self-sacrifice to that degree, that whoever loses his life because of me will save it. If Jesus is just a good teacher, but he's not actually the Christ, he doesn't have a right to say that and demand that of you. Who is he? Who is Jesus? Well, as we continue, we'll see, because God keeps providing evidence. He already has provided evidence, and he just keeps on doing it. And so Jesus asks us to publicly confess his name, to make sure that other people know that we belong to Christ. And Jesus, as a reward for that, in verse 27, he promises that there are some who are standing here, right? There are some who are present in that day and age who will get to see the kingdom of God arrive, who will get to see the great power of God arrive. What does that look like? Well, that's a good question, and we'll get into that later as we get into the rest of the book. The idea that Jesus is planting here is this great idea that he is Christ, and based on that confession, based on that idea, you have to give him everything. And so there's that question. Who is Jesus? Is he Christ or is he not? Because that's pretty important. If he is not Christ, he has no right to say any of this. Saying this makes him an abusive, manipulative leader. Saying this makes him a terrible, evil, awful person. You should not follow him if he is not Christ. You should not listen to him if he is not Christ. And if he is not Christ, the Bible is invalid and nothing it has to say about God is reliable. On the other hand, if he is the Christ, right? How do we determine that? You look at his actions, you look at his claims, you look at what he does and what he teaches, and you evaluate who he is. If he is the Christ, he has every right to demand everything from you. If he is the Christ, he has every right to tell you how you ought to live. If he is the Christ, he has every right to commandeer the course of your life. He has every right to tell you who you ought to be. If he is the Christ, he is God. He is working with God. He is working for God. He is God. And as such, he has a part to play in our very creation. He has every right and every reason to command us to obey. And so it's a really important question on who he is. But there is no in-between. He has not left that open to us. He did not intend to. Maybe Peter's right, and he is the Christ, and as such, we need to follow everything he says. Maybe, you know, other people are right. Maybe the Jewish leaders are right. He is not the Christ, and we shouldn't follow anything that he says. Well, how do we determine? And thus, we'll keep looking at the book of Luke as we go forward. There's an interesting story in the rest of chapter 9. I'll probably jump around in the rest of chapter 9 next episode to talk about a little bit of who Jesus is displayed to be, and then we'll keep on going and how Jesus continues to communicate, how he speaks, what he teaches, how he acts, all these miracles that he's doing in an effort to provide you evidence that he is, in fact, the Christ, and he can, in fact, back up his claim, and even his claim that he will die and come back to life will come true when God makes it true near the end of the book. Spoilers ahead, because that's exactly where we're going, because that's exactly what Jesus said. And as such, he is the Christ, and I hope to make that case to you as we keep going forward. Thanks for listening. Hope you enjoyed, hope you benefited and learned something from that. It was a little bit messy. I haven't had a ton of brain space to think about it this week, but better something than nothing, and so hopefully that starts to make an impression on you, and you ask this question, who is Jesus, like, actually? And then we'll get to an answer as we continue going throughout. God bless. I'll see you next time.